Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Director of Community Programs for the Orthodox Union, and it's my honor to coordinate and host this program. SPIRIT was started a number of years ago, first as an on-site program, and now we're very happy to present it as an online program for baby boomers, empty nesters, retirees, not yet retirees, sandwich generation parents, empty nesters, and seniors, all of whom are looking for spiritual, educational, and intellectual growth. Now, during the pandemic, we are all still sheltering in, and SPIRIT has become the perfect way for each one of us to engage in a virtual setting. Today, we are very happy to welcome Mrs. Susan Mattel, RN, who is the Corporate Director of Daycare Services for Bainbridge Adult Health Center. Mrs. Mattel will speak to us today about safety with aging, with strategies to ensure the safety for ourselves and for our loved ones. By the way, this is part one of a two-part program. We'll be continuing the program in a couple of weeks in September. And any questions you have, you can email to me, steinigj@ou.org, steinigj@ou.org. You see my email on everything that I send out. And I'll be happy to get that to our speaker who will address those in the next session. It's an honor to turn the SPIRIT Forum over to Mrs. Mattel. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, everybody. Welcome. We're going to be talking about general issues for the older population on safety and preparation for safety and getting older. I understand that this is a that you, the viewers, are a wide range of ages, and that's perfect because we've now medically divided the aging population into the young old, middle old, and old old. And everybody in that population has different needs. As we get older, we may experience some functional impairments or inability to do things based on the aging process itself or based on disease that might occur along with aging or the combination thereof. And this lesser ability to function can increase the possibility of having injury and accidents. There might even be times in our lives where we may have to weigh the balance between independence and risk. So we're going to talk about some of those factors that might mitigate the risks, increase our independence, and hopefully keep us functioning as much as possible. But we have to realize that as we grow older, our bodies don't react as they did or as well as they did when we were younger. We don't have the reserves. Think of it as a car. Even when the car gas tank is on empty, there's a couple of gallons left to get you to the gas tank. Those reserves, the ability to bounce back after injury, are reduced substantially, which is why it takes a longer period of time for an older person to recuperate from the same type of injury a younger person would have. So, Haroa es hanolad, we have to be prepared for the future. We have to plan how to mitigate changes that might occur in the future. It's easier to prepare for it in advance than do it retroactively. And when you're making any kind of plans, think about where will I be in 10 to 15 years? Yirtzeh Hashem will all be in Eretz Yisrael, Mashiach will come. But I'm talking about physically, where will I be in 10 to 15 years? If I'm in the 60s, I'm planning for 70 or 80 and so on. Then there are those of us who are planning for ourselves, and there are those of us who are caregivers, who are already caregivers, and who have to plan, how am I going to take care of this person that I'm caring for safely? Okay, so there are a bunch of general items that really must be done in advance. We've gone in the healthcare world in America from a Medina Shel Chesed to a Medina that really doesn't really care about older people, that talk about rationing of care, that talk about quality of life issues. And these are not halachic ways of looking at things. So in order to keep your own wishes and desires and keeping to halacha, you have to have paperwork. I'll tell you the truth, 20 years ago, I would not have been giving this as the first item of safety and preparation. The first thing you need to do is have a halachic living will. You can get it from RCA, from Aguda, from NYSA. Any of these organizations have it. They are available online. A halachic living will says, if chalila v'chas, I can't make my own decisions, then I appoint so-and-so under the auspices of this Rav or this organization to determine what medical issues will be done to me, whether it is DNRs, whether it is feeding, whether it's antibiotic therapy. There are numerous ways that we have to monitor our health care. Frankly, anybody who's 18 years old and older should have a halachic living will, especially if your child who's 18 years and older is living in a dormitory out of state. It's very important. These are state-specific documents. So if you travel between two states, let's say New York and Florida, New York and New Jersey, or somewhere in America to Eretz Yisrael, you need the documents for that state. So you may need to do two or three different types of documents depending upon what your life is like. So this is a health-related document. Your private medical doctor should have a copy. The person you have said is going to be your healthcare proxy should have a copy of the document. And there should be extra documents available posted on your refrigerator or on the bedboard in your room in case chalila v'chas Hatzalah or EMS has to come and take you. The documents are readily available to bring to the hospital. In addition, there should be a HIPAA release in America, which allows one or two people to have access to all your medical information. You pick your family member, your healthcare proxy, whoever's near, so that when that release is done, the hospital can legally give them all the healthcare information that they need. Then you need a list of doctors, medicines, and diseases. Somewhere along the line, it changes, but nobody's going to remember in emergency what medications you're taking and what doses. This will take away hours and tests in an ER for them to know what you have. So keep that with the other documents, and that has to be updated regularly. Lo aleinu ad mea ve'esrim shana, we have to plan for after we need burial information, prepaid plots, which chevra kadisha one would need. Then we also need for financial information, you need a power of attorney. A power of attorney is similar to a halachic living will, except it's dealing with finances. Again, whether it's a basic will or it is your power of attorney over your current finances, halachic authority should be consulted because there are many issues related to mamonos that you have to pursue. That's really it with the paperwork. That's really the paperwork that you need. And that's a paperwork that whoever you're caregiving for should have. And that will help ease any kind of medical situations because they do need to know finances. And that would help smooth the way for any kind of care issues or planning that you need to do. The other healthcare piece that you need to do is as we get older, we have to make sure we have our vaccinations, especially during this COVID crisis. COVID is a respiratory virus, or it starts out, let me rephrase that. They start out as a respiratory virus. It does affect the lungs and the respiration, but so does flu and so does pneumonia. We do not want to see a person entering the hospital with symptoms, and they're all similar symptoms, with COVID and flu or COVID and pneumonia. Treatments are somewhat different. So please make sure that you get your yearly flu vaccine. We're coming up to September to October where the flu vaccines will be sent out. Make sure that everybody gets that flu vaccine. Yes, I know it's not 100% effective, but it's more effective than not. There's also for people 65 and older, a series of pneumonia vaccinations that you should have every 5 years. Please make sure you get those. In addition, it's recommended that anybody who is over 65 get a shingles vaccine if they had chickenpox when they were younger. You can also test Have your doctor test for titers to see how much of the immunity you have to DT tetanus and to measles, mumps, and rubella. Those are things that can come back. If you need a booster, then your doctor can give you a booster. All of those things will keep you safe or help maintain safety in health. But on the other hand, we have to prepare for a possible hospitalization as we get older. Illness, accidents, injuries. So how do we prepare for a possible hospitalization? Number one, have all the documents ready. Number two, when you go into the hospital, they give you a lot of papers to sign. Read those carefully. And when you're signing consent forms, read the consent forms. See what you like and what you don't like about them. There are in the consent forms, they put everything they could possibly put in those consent forms. So there's a consent somewhere along the line for anybody to video you for education purposes. I always cross that out. I'm not interested in them bringing a video of me to a medical school or whatever it is. When it comes to insurance, they are telling you who's going to pay and who's not. I usually write, I add things to these consents. You must tell me, unless it's an emergency, you must tell me if something is not covered by my insurance, otherwise I don't approve. Okay. If you are signing consents for somebody else, you're the caregiver and somebody's coming into the hospital, make sure you don't sign that you're responsible for the finances in the hospital. You're not responsible, only the insurance company of the person who is entering the hospital. There will be a HIPAA form, a release of information. Have one or two family members on that HIPAA form so the hospital can talk to you. Ensure that it's only one or two people. It's doctors and nurses in the hospital are underserved, they're understaffed, and they really don't have all that much time. You want them to spend the time treating the patients. They don't have time to speak to every single family member that's coming. Get a pad and a pen with you. Have one or two people who are in charge of talking to the doctors. And then the rest of the family can give their questions to them so that it becomes less confusing and less irritating to the staff. One of the things we're seeing in the hospitals now, and there's an increase of this, is that many of the people, because of COVID, or because they don't want to be matriarch going to a hospital or to a doctor, stay home until it becomes very, very dangerous. What this does is delay treatment and cause much more risk. So for example, a person who might or might not be having a stroke, and they're not sure, okay, stays home until the stroke becomes very, very bad and causes major side effects that take months or years to heal or to repair. However, had he gone to the hospital within the first 2 hours, there's medication that can mitigate those side effects and start healing process immediately. So the rule of thumb with hospitalizations are, if you are not sure, you go. Any chash, you go. The worst that will happen is that you've wasted 24 hours. The best that will happen is that you have helped the healing process start earlier with less risks and management. If you are the caregiver of a person who might have dementia or might have had a stroke or is very weak in cardiac conditioning, because normally this conversation we're having is about the general aging population, but if you're the caregiver, make sure that the patient or the person you're caregiving for has an ID band that says their name and the disease. If they have any kind of dementias, you can get one from the Safe Return Bracelet from the Alzheimer's Association, which has a number and which has a much more detailed information for the hospital and for the caregivers. If you are the sole caregiver, it might be a spouse to a patient, and you are the sole caregiver, you yourself should have an ID bracelet saying, I am the caregiver of a person with Alzheimer's. This is the person's address. So in case, chalila v'chas, something happens to you as the caregiver, EMS knows to look, or the police know to look for this other person and to ensure their safety. I, in fact, actually did have a patient who had severe dementia, and the wife had a heart attack, and he went with her to the hospital, but the hospital was not notified that he himself had severe dementia, and he walked out of the hospital, and he was found roaming on the highway, walking, trying to either find home or find support services or something. So please, please try to make sure that you have the IDs available. Now, many of our men especially do not want to wear bracelets. Jewelry is, especially among the older population, is not something that they used to wear. You can change the band of the watch so that the watch band has an ID on it, or you can get the camp labels and put them and sew them on in the back of the neck of the shirt and on the belt of a person so that the IDs are on them at all times. Those are possibilities that you can get. If you hire caregivers for somebody, the rove of the caregivers are wonderful, wonderful people there. Lower paid, but they really care. But there are always bad apples in every group. So therefore, I suggest you get cameras, security cameras in the house of the patient. You might want to get the baby cams or the nanny cams. They're all available. They're not overly expensive. And that way you can make sure that your loved one is being treated with dignity and respect and not being neglected or abused. The other thing that you have to prepare for as a caregiver is for a time when you no longer can care for that person. Either that person's medical or emotional status has gotten too difficult for you to take care of at home, or because you yourself don't have the energy. There are wonderful organizations out there that can help you prepare for the future. OHEL, HASC, all of these organizations deal with developmentally disabled persons, so they are used to preparing for an individual who may have other reasons where you can't caregive them. Out of the state, if Judy has my number or my contact information, you can call me up anytime and I'll be happy to help you. Another thing that we have, as we have decreased function, we sometimes lose independence, and that's not fun. So one of the things we have to do is try to find a way to increase function without decreasing the dignity of the person who is getting older. There are a myriad amounts of adaptive equipment to help somebody who's lost function in an area get that area back. There is no boucho or embarrassment for using adaptive equipment. Eyeglasses are adaptive equipment. I can't see so well, I use my eyeglasses. Hearing aids are adaptive equipment. If you have ambulation problems, knee problems, walking problems, then a cane is an adaptive equipment. They come in all colors, they come in all shapes, they come in all sizes. Some people need a cane periodically, so they have portable canes that you can put in your knapsack or whatever, or your backpack, and carry it around. And when you need it, you have a cane. You can leave it in your car, but you have something in case of an emergency, in case those knees hurt and you can't walk, or in case there's a steep incline, whatever the case may be. You should also check the tips of canes and walkers, because they wear away, and then you might need a new walker tip or cane tip, which can be gotten in many drugstores or in medical supply stores, and replace the tips as needed. Walkers. Sometimes people need walkers, but walkers should be designed for your need. There are walkers with seats on it. There are walkers that are rolling walkers. And there are the plain walkers that come out of the hospital that you have to lift and pull down. For those walkers, the basic walker without any kind of anything, you can get a tennis ball, split it, and put it on the foot of the walker on the front so that it smoothly guides. It's much easier to use that way. walkers or walkers that are medically made to support a person who has balance issues. Shopping carts are not walkers. I can't tell you how many people we see, elderly people, who use a shopping cart as a walker. Problem is, they are not made to support the weight of somebody leaning on them. They don't have brakes so they can roll immediately and fall. Plus, they increase the injury of somebody falling because, in addition to the fall, the top of the shopping cart is usually metal and can cause lacerations and bleeds. Shopping carts, and you're going to hear me say this a couple of times, shopping carts are not to be used as walkers. There are also adaptive equipments. There are grippers. Those are the things in the store you get used to take off from the top shelf the merchandise that you can't reach. Those grippers are available, again, in medical supply stores. They were created, I believe, by Benjamin Franklin, so he could sit in his chair and take a book out of his library. And you can use that in the house if you can't bend down to pick things up. So there, and we're going to talk about some other adaptive equipment as we go on, but adaptive equipment increases independence, it increases safety, and is to be used appropriately. And nobody should be embarrassed by using them. They're wonderful. Another area that seniors have to work on and worry about, and these are the general things that we're going to talk about, is financial fraud and cybersecurity. Seniors are a tremendous risk for financial fraud. I am not talking about dementia, but there are other things that cause memory loss or poor judgment. Mild cognitive impairment, of which 40% do develop into dementias, but some people have them. It may be because there are changes in the brain function. It may be because they're having medication issues. It may be because they have disease issues. Poor judgment. Our reflexes, our ability to think clearly sometimes get lost. Depression, anxiety, fear. All of those things make seniors, where people who are older, ripe for fraud. In addition, we are a very generous people. We give tzedakah, whether it's putting our hand in a pocket and giving somebody money or writing out a check to the shulach who comes to the door. It doesn't matter. We are used to giving. Baruch Hashem, it's a chesed, wonderful. Problem is that if we have poor judgment or if we have suggestibility, we may give more than we are able to afford or more than we plan to. So somebody, instead of writing out a $100 check, might write out a $10,000 check. This is not far-fetched. I know quite a few, I know actually two people who lost their fortunes because they literally gave away all their money and they didn't have enough money for themselves or their uses or for their own use because they didn't think about it. It didn't mean the same thing to them. So we have to understand that if we suspect somebody might have financial difficulties because they forgot to pay their bills or because they don't remember the things or they're a little bit confused or forgetful, whatever the case may be, it might be time to give over finances to somebody else. Again, this is what we're talking about, ROAS, Hanolad, preparing for the future. Know that this may happen even to ourselves. So if it does happen and we prepare for the fact that we may not be our completely functional the way we used to be, and we prepare for that, it might be easier for us to give away a little bit of that independence. Phone scams are very prevalent for seniors, and it usually comes down to the IRS calling and threatening, but one of the most suggestible phone scams for seniors is somebody who calls up and says that it's your grandson or your granddaughter and they're stuck in a country and mommy and daddy can't know because of something or other and they need money wired immediately. That senior will wire that money immediately. So prepare for it. Talk to them about phone scams. Talk to them about somebody's coming in to put, there's a new program in the city and they want to put in solar powered energy or take away your energy or save money or whatever the case may be. Let them know that they should not give any personal identifying information over the phone. It is very important. If you hire caregivers or housekeepers, repairmen, keep all personal identifying information in a locked place away from anybody who can sit there and photocopy it or take that information and use it for their own. You don't want to find out that you're limited to a certain type of medical procedure because somebody used the money up for you or took away your house from you because of it. Cybersecurity, many seniors are using iPhones and other electronic devices. Please make sure that they understand that you don't put, unless you have a really powerful security, that you don't put information on the computer that can be hacked into. Those are general information for all seniors, but related to safety and injury, the single most common cause of hospitalizations, injury, and surgeries are falls. And there are two categories of falls. There are slips and trips, and there are falls related to medication, disease, and side effects. So what can we do to prevent falls and to prevent the injuries? And what does a fall actually mean to a person? Well, let's start with that first. The force of falling is four times the force of the person's weight. So if somebody weighs 100 pounds and falls on the hip is receiving 400 pounds worth of force, hence the crack bones and the injuries, okay? So somebody weighing 150, it's four times that. So you have to understand that falls really cause major injury. In addition, as we get older, our bones lose some of their substance. Many of us develop osteoporosis and we have calcium deficits. Our bones aren't as strong unless you're really been weightlifting all along. So therefore, we're more readily available for breaks and injuries in case of a fall. So how do we reduce the possibility of falls? Let's start with the medication to disease and side effects. Everybody should keep a list of medications. And they should be an ongoing list as changes occur, whether dosages have changed or medications have been moderated. We also see numerous doctors, and they do look at a list, a cursory list of the medications, but they are not looking with the intensity of saying, is the patient experiencing any symptoms that may be related to the medication? Are two medications working with each other to cause the symptoms? Is the disease in the medication causing this? Are there side effects? Are there contraindications? I suggest that anybody who's taking a couple of meds routinely should actually bring a list to a pharmacist, make an appointment with the pharmacist, and have them go through all the medications and see if you are experiencing, tell them what side effects you might be having, whether you're dizzy, whether you've had a trip, even if you think there's a reason for it, and let them know so he can look and suggest to the doctors that ordered it that maybe we could either reduce the dosage of this medication or maybe we could substitute another medication for this that may have less side effects. This should be done pretty much yearly if you're keeping the same medications, more frequently if there are frequent changes in your medications, and if you start experiencing symptoms. Another problem that we see with seniors and medication that cause falls, besides side effects and contraindications and too much medications, is the fact that many people forget to take medications on a daily basis, or that many people take too much medication on a daily basis. For that, there's another little aid. These are cheap. You can buy them in the store. These, and they come sometimes if you're taking medication for several times during the day, they come by the daily ring. Here's Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. You pre-pour the medications once a week, and then you take them as you need them, and you can say, oh, did I take Tuesdays? Oh, yes, I did. Tuesdays is up. I took it. It's empty. It's fine. For somebody who might have arthritis and tremors, there are other boxes that open up and make it easier to lift. Okay, there are bigger numbers where there are all different kinds of these medication containers. If the person can't pre-pour themselves or they don't know their medications, then somebody else can come in once or twice and prepare their pre-poured medication for them. An aide in the house is not allowed to do it if it's New York City and you hired the aide through an agency, but they can ensure the person opens it and takes it, but they're not allowed to pre-pour it. So somebody, family member, may have to do that. And that will help reduce the incidence of overtaking medication or not taking enough. Also, some medication is given as per need. You shouldn't be taking it routinely. Many people do take those medications routinely. They're not made for that. So please check with your doctor if you feel you're taking it routinely. Maybe he can give you something to offset that. The third medical diagnosis that really can cause fall are ear problems. The middle ear has balance, and that's where your balance is, besides your knees and your arthritis and other issues. So if there are ear problems, there may be some balance issues with that, to consult with your doctor as to whether you need to go and get that tested. Those are some of the things we can do to reduce the falls based on medication, disease, and side effects. But how do we reduce falls from the slips and the trips? Because that's a real major cause of falls. Again, falls being the most single cause for hospitalizations and surgeries based on injury. Check favorite slippers. I love coming into houses of seniors and seeing them wear these worn out fuzzy little slippers with no backing and no support. They are major trip hazards. Shoes, footwear, all should be checked for heels to make sure the heels aren't worn out, to check to make sure that they can support when the back no longer can support. The shoes do need support in the back. Your slip-on should not be used, especially when climbing stairs. Anything with a front opening might be used as a trip hazard. So damaged footwear should not be used. So please check those shoes to reduce falls. If one has balance equipment, again, use the adaptive equipment. Use the cane, use whatever you need or were prescribed for as adaptive equipment. Again, please remember, shopping carts are not walkers. When walking from room to room, a change in a surface might be. So you can see that a lower level, here, let's see if we can do this better, needs to step up. If somebody is not aware or their perception or depth perception is off, they're not going to be able to change so rapidly. Plus, going from a smooth surface to a rug or a rug to a smooth surface, the texture changes also can cause difficulties. Sometimes you have a raised threshold from room to room. Make sure those thresholds are put into the floor and they're not loose. If you're preparing an apartment for getting older or you're preparing an apartment to move into, try to get rid of all those raised thresholds and have one smooth floor. That will prevent trips and falls from moving from one location to another. Check all rugs for threadbare sides as you walk through. Your pathway is going to become lower down and more used than the pathways on the side. That also can cause tripping. Throw rugs, carpets that are not nailed into the floor, but even if they are taped down, you can trip by tripping over that edge. They should be removed. Clutter and clear pathways. As one gets older, one needs clearer pathways. Clutter increases confusion in somebody who might be confused. Plus, clutter is wrong for a whole different thing. But for safety-wise, if somebody falls and all the things fall on them, they will have greater injury. I have been in apartments that have newspapers from 1929, stacks and stacks of them. I have been in apartments that have had unbelievable amounts of clutter. I have seen bags of flour from stores that are defunct with maggots coming out of them. I've seen people save things that their kids gave them when their kids were 5 years old, and their kids are now 65 years old, and it's still in the house. Getting rid of clutter is a really good thing. It decreases the dust and allergens, vermin, and all kinds of things in the house. But remember two things. One, that piece of clutter might have been very important to your mom or dad or whatever. Take pictures of it. Have them help you, tell you what to keep and what not to keep. And if you're really against moving or throwing out the stuff, store it for a while in a garage or a little storage unit so that they can get used to the fact it's not there. Take pictures, make a little album for them so they have a picture of things that were near and dear to them. I would also suggest that you check clutter very, very carefully, because people have a habit of hiding money, checks, important documents in there. Not everybody trusts banks and security boxes. Some people will have hidden things and mattresses and pillows and whatever. So check thoroughly everything to see if there's any hidden treasures in there. Forgive my doll furniture, but my office is closed. So this is the best I can get you for a while. Check tables for sturdiness. If I'm on the floor and I'm getting up and I'm leaning, if the table isn't sturdy, it's going to fall down and I'm not going to be able to get up. So check tables for sturdiness. Check chairs to make sure that all the chairs are securely glued together. Hanging tablecloths, scarves, and sashes on belts, on robes especially, because they come loose, are trip hazards. The reason the hanging tablecloth is, again, if somebody's on the floor, they're going to pull something to try to get up, and they'll pull the whole thing off. Staircases and steps. Each staircase should have steps that are exactly the same height. Your brain works on motor memory. Motor memory means the ability to remember something without conscious effort. And if a step is mishight or the depth is different, it's not symmetrical, it will take time. If you're cognitively intact, it takes instantaneous times. But for somebody who is not, it takes longer, and that can be a trip hazard. Also, anybody who is in a wheelchair, wherever you move, make sure the brakes are on, because that way somebody can't push them if the brakes are on. Another safety issue around the house is electric, fire, plumbing, and lighting. These are issues that we see. We see burns, we see fires a lot with the elderly. So these are things that have to be checked out. All homes need to have all outlets checked for possible shorts. Mom or dad, or whoever you're caring for, is not going to tell you about the lights blinking in and out. All homes need fire alarms. They need carbon monoxide alarms. It's especially important if somebody is forgetful and forgets to turn off appliances or stoves. With stoves, you might want to get the child stove top so that they can turn them on and off. Check the batteries for the fire alarms to see if they're working. Make sure all windows can be opened. Older homes are often painted shut and cannot open those windows in case we need to get out of a fire, in case we need to get out in case of fire. Many of us, if second floors or whatever, put little fire escape ladders, again, my dollhouse, put fire escape ladders in the windows so that we can climb out. Can mom or dad get on a ladder? Can they safely climb out a window? Think of other methods or other ways that they can egress in case of a fire. Remind everybody, elevators cannot be used in a fire. Elevators work by going to the highest, hottest point there is, which is usually where you can press the button to make the connection. In a fire, the hottest point is the floor of the fire. How can they get out of the building? What should they do? Practice fire drills. Again, we're relying on motor energy, memory. Drills cause the body to act in certain ways. So if you practice more often, you just automatically do it. You don't have to think about it. Chimneys have to be cleaned. also dryer rinse filters. Clean out those lint filters and clean out the dryer hose outside. Those are fire. Those are places where fires can occur. Extension cords present several dangers. One is a trip hazard. The other one is that often people do not use the right cord for the right appliance, or they use the extension where they can put several cords in which cannot handle the fire or the wattage. And sometimes the cords aren't completely connected, which leaves the metal pieces open so that sparks can come out. Portable heaters can cause burns and fires. Get those that are childproof, that are safe, that you are UL underwriter lab, so that they are safe and they have been tested for safety. Lighting in a house. As we get older, our eyes are affected, whether it's dry eyes and allergy eyes, cataracts, glaucoma, just some of the things that might happen. There might be small bleeds in the eyes, there might be fluids, whatever the case may be. There are all kinds of retina problems. Lighting is needed for different types of eye problems. Contact your ophthalmologist, your optometrist, your whatever, and ask them. One of the questions is, what kind of lighting is best for me? Lights not only come with different color bulbs, there are white bulbs, blue bulbs, and yellow bulbs, but they come with glare and glare-free, they're LED, whatever. You want to know which ones are best for the person who is visually having issues. There should be adequate lighting at night. Glare-free lighting is needed, and that we'll talk about next time related to driving. People often have difficulties in adjusting from dark to light, from light to dark. So the two times a day that are most difficult for people are in dusk and dawn. Those are also two times of the day that driving becomes much more difficult. It's very important to have lights in the house at night, especially from the bedroom to the bathroom, which we'll talk about a little bit. And there are inexpensive LED stick-on lights that you could stick on the wall so that it guides somebody from the bathroom to the bedroom and vice versa. With a plumbing, we also have to realize that as we get older, the sensory levels in our skin are not as agile as they used to be. And we can't sense heat and cold the same way. So get the plumber to come in and lower the temperature in the water heater or in the kitchen sink or both of them so that nobody gets scalded with very, very hot water to reduce the chance of burns in the shower and in the kitchen. Whew. Those are all the general issues. Now we're going to take a little house tour. The most dangerous room in the house is the bathroom. People have the most falls in the bathroom. So one of the first things we want to do is get a personal emergency response system. It's not this, but those are little alarms that hang around the neck. But good companies have them where you can put them on the wall about 3 inches from the face of the floor in the bathroom, which allows for somebody who's fallen on the floor to get help. Install shower and bath bars. Showers are substantially safer than bathtubs, so get a hand shower for that shower. The bath bars have to be professionally installed with toggle bolts. Remember, they have to hold the weight of somebody 4 times the weight of the person, because a fall is 4 times the 4th. So it should be able to hold 400 or 500 pounds of weight if somebody is slipping. Ask yourself if the floor in the bathroom is slippery when wet. If it is, then get the little rubber grips that we put in the tubs and put them on the floor. Get rid of the floor mats, because somebody coming out of a bathtub is putting all their weight on the mat. And if the mat slips, then they can fall. Fix broken tiles. For those people who have arthritis and difficulty bending their knees and getting up, you can have bars around the toilet to help them and get a raised toilet seat so that it's easier for them to get up. If you're redoing a bathroom, make it wheelchair accessible. if you can put in a bidet in the toilet, which is a force of fluid that's hygienically cleans somebody afterwards, a plumber can do that. The reason being that as people get older, it becomes more difficult for them to stand and clean themselves after using the bathroom. So this way you have something that can clean them easily. Again, the lighting from the bathroom to the bedroom. Keep minimal medications. When they expire, throw them out. If they're not used anymore, discontinued, again, throw them out. We used to tell everybody to pour them down the toilet. It is not safe any longer. So what we ask you to do is fill them up with water or something and then double bag them into a garbage and then throw them out. Staircases, again, check for rugs that might have frayed spots. Check the banisters. When was the last time anybody checked the banisters in your house to make sure they're secure? Make sure there are lights. There should be a light on each end of the hallway. Put on, if you need, non-slip treads. And also, if somebody is confused, you might want to put one of those child gates, safety gates, on the top of the stairs. So again, we're most worried about that in the nighttime when somebody is going to the bathroom. So that they don't fall down the stairs. Bedrooms, reduce clutter, keep passageway wide. If somebody has a tendency of falling out of bed, we don't want them to land and hurt themselves. You can put a mattress or a cushion on the floor next to the bed. The problem is that if they do walk, that might be a trip hazard. There are special cushiony floorings now that absorb impact. It's sort of like the kitchen. There are easily readily available stuff for the kitchen. When you're standing too long, they have the same kind of thing for the flooring. Satiny sheets can be difficult because they're slidey, so don't use them. It has to be really planning in this, and how you help somebody from falling out of bed has to be based on that individual. Studies have shown that bars, safety bars, people who are confused climb over them and can increase falls. If you can lower the bed a little bit, that would be helpful. A trip from the bathroom again to the bedroom, you see, I keep focusing on the same safety issues because those are the most common areas. Remember that somebody who's getting up in the middle of the night may still be in a dream state, but the dream state says he has to go to the bathroom, so he's going to the bathroom, so they may be a little bit confused. Some people have installed banisters along the hallway so somebody can actually hold on to it while they're walking. Those are some of the things we can do in the bedroom. Kitchen, and I think that's going to be the last room we're going to be discussing today. Kitchen. In the kitchen, burns are a major problem. We use more fire than everybody else. We use fire for Shabbos candles. We use fire for Havdalah candles. We have Yom Tov candles. We have Yahrzeit candles. I'm not talking Pesach. I'm not talking Hanukkah. I'm just talking in general. We use blechs. We use urns. We cook more so than the rest of the population does. So burns are a major issue. An elderly person has a problem recuperating from burns, again, because the reserves aren't there. Urns are especially dangerous because the faucets can drip hot water. You're better off getting the pump urn where you have to pump it instead of the faucet urn where you just pick it up. If someone's confused at home, use the child caps on the stove or take the stove knobs off. Have fire alarms and fire extinguishers available. Make sure your kitchen outlets are the newest. There are kitchen outlets that stop or prevent water from going in. There are kitchen outlets that can handle the new equipment we have. Remember, we didn't have everything electronic 40 years ago, and some kitchens are that old that we do now. So all of those appliances create heat, and you have to make sure the kitchen outlets are adaptable. Just this is not a safety issue, but if you have caregivers at home, know that even in the most well-meaning of caregivers might make things trafe. So if you have a good set of china, you might want to pack it away because that's not kosherable. Any other shilas for the kitchen, it's another discussion. But if you do have homemakers or caregivers at home that you have hired, you have to ask a rough how to handle that situation. Somebody with arthritis or balance or pain may have difficulty holding things. Soup is a very, very hard thing to hold because liquids slosh as you're walking. So balance is not just holding it straight, but it's holding it straight when the liquid is moving. Somebody who has difficulty, hot chicken soup is a real problem. Just to give you an example, cholin's a problem, but not as badly as hot soup is. Soup, first of all, burns hotter than water because it has fat in it. Secondly, this is makes it very, very hard to maneuver and to serve. So you might want to put a soup tureen on the table so somebody can scoop it out it that way. Or you might want to have somebody else holding it. Pots are definitely too heavy to hold with water balancing. And you need a movement like this. It's a very strong movement, which many people with arthritis and Parkinson's disease cannot do. Lock all poisons and cleaning materials in a separate cabinet. Make sure that you don't pour it into something that looks like a drinking thing. Again, elderly people do have some confusion and visual impairment, and we don't want to have any swallowing issues. I also seen, and this should be routinely told anybody, you don't mix ammonia and chlorine bleach together because it causes methane gas, which can kill you. So please don't. Last thing I want to talk about is somebody with tremors, I'm pulling out, have difficulty eating, especially something with soup where there's hot liquid here. Tremors like this. So there are weighted equipment. These are weighted utensils. They weigh about a pound each. Reduce tremors. Thing on weights around the hand can reduce tremors. My suggestion really is if somebody is having functional impairment, difficulty in doing the things that they've actually, that they used to do, then go to an occupational therapist and have them examine them and tell you which adaptive equipment is available for them at all times to make them as independent and as safe as possible. We want to make sure that they are risk-free and they maintain their covered and their dignity as they get older. That's it for the house. Next time, we'll be addressing issues such as driving, outdoor safety, COVID, and any questions. Everybody keep safe and have a good Chodesh. Thank you very much.
Susan, thank you so much. That was wonderful for all of us, for ourselves, and for those of us who are handling caregiving responsibilities. I think we all have a lot to think about. I think we're going to all now walk around our houses, think about whether we want to do this right now or in the future. You've given us a lot of homework to do to make sure that we are all safe and secure and our families as well. Thank you so much. As Susan said, this was just part one. Part two is coming on September 8th, Be'ezras Hashem, that's a Tuesday. So if you have any questions or any items that you particularly would like to see discussed, please email to me and I will get it to Susan so that we'll be prepared then. So I just want to let everybody know that we have a change in the schedule for Thursday. Thursday, we have a program, it's called Qigong. It's about mental and physical health with Dr. Naomi Baum. Dr. Baum recorded the program with me 2 days ago, and she did it for me because the Be'ezras Hashem, it's a good thing. I cannot host the program on Thursday because with God's help, I have the bris of my grandson, which will be done outdoors with social distancing and masks. But since I wasn't sure I'd be back in time to do the program, it's been pre-recorded. So everybody that has registered on Zoom, you will be getting prior to the program, probably from me or your Orthodox Union. Watch your emails. It'll say in the announcement that that is a link to the program. So you will get the program and you can watch it anytime you want. And it has actually some handouts with it. So that is on Thursday. And with God's help, we'll be back to regular schedule next week. We will be announcing that shortly. So I just want to, you'll get emails on those programs. As I've said before, the Spirit Archives, which are, the link is in every email you get, are not just live now, they are actually updated through last Thursday's program. So we're trying to keep that up on a weekly basis. And I can tell you as of yesterday, because I did it, each one that had any handouts, they are now up with the archive. So if you deleted anything, it's all there and it will be housed permanently on the OU site. So the archives are available for everybody. So I want to wish everybody a good week. I'll wish you in advance a good Shabbos. Have a great day. Be safe and healthy. And thank you again, Mrs. Patel. Take care, everybody.